This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, everybody, welcome back to the How to Hunt Turkey podcast. We're coming a little late this week. We had some shakeups in the schedule, so I apologize that we're getting this episode out late this week. However, we got it out, and that's all I care about. Today's guest, Mr. Scott Cronin, he's been on the Nine Figure Chronicles podcast before, I believe the Hunting Gear podcast before, but this is a first for you. As far as the How to Hunt Turkey podcast, and you're going to talk to us a little bit today about your upcoming spring and things like that. But welcome to the show, man.
Man, I appreciate it. It's a great time of year. The fish are starting to bite and turkeys are strutting. All the deer hunting strategies are put aside for a while, and either had a really good season or a really bad season. Just got done making a big batch of deer jerky today. So it always hits just right during turkey season.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen a lot of turkeys, but I have yet to see my first strutter out in the field yet. So yeah. I'm waiting for that day.
Yeah, well, we're in the best of the weather right now. We're coming off what looks to be the last big kick of mother winter, and everything's going to be really nice. And things are on a fast track. Spring is ahead. I just got back from driving across the entire state of Missouri, which is going to benefit me greatly with my turkey season, and we'll get into that. But spring vegetation is well ahead of schedule, and it looks that temperatures are going to be pretty warm and high. I look for a lot of vegetation to be popping. And Kentucky, we're hitting my home state. We're hitting on that little bit of a rotation where our season's coming in later. A lot of states are opening up turkey seasons later now, period. So it's going to be an easy year to hide in some green vegetation for sure. I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of barren landscape.
No, that and the ticks. My guess is it's going to be a bad tick year this year.
It's a bad tick year every year. There is, without a doubt, we need to get you linked up with Sawyers and Travis Avery and do a podcast sometime, because
I've already done it with him.
No kidding.
Sawyers podcast with him. Yep.
So all of our men and women that are out in the field, our biologists, our game wardens, all of our kids that are playing in backyards, turkey hunters, anglers, this vector-borne illness is legit. And if you're not treating your clothes and you're not treating your skin, please make sure you do so. We all enjoy being carnivores, but there's a whole lot more to it. The tick is not going to go away for a while, it looks like. Seems like there's more ticks in turkeys. And if you're chasing turkeys, you're definitely going to find some ticks. So
that's for sure. For sure. Okay. So you've already mentioned this. You live in the state of Kentucky. Talk to us a little bit about and you can keep it at like 5 years, going back 5 years, 10 years, whatever you want. Talk to us a little bit about the last 10 years of turkey hunting up to now in the state of Kentucky.
All right. So we definitely seen our prime of turkey hunting and most parts of the state as far as bird populations and numbers. That's going to be the biggest reaction that you're going to get from most people, is the significant decline in areas. There were some pockets that got hit really hard that have not come back extremely well. I'm in one of those areas. The cicadas have been definitely a huge influence. There's been a lot of rumors and a lot of stereotypes. We're actually going to try to help do our part with some youth and some other hunters. We're going to do some of the DNA turkey sampling that Dr. Mike Chamberlain and his crews got going on with that wild turkey DNA. So a lot of people are looking for answers on what happened or the decline in turkeys. But over the last 10 years, turkey hunting is at an all-time high. We just come off of the NWTF convention where there was close to 100,000 people that went down to Nashville and walked through that convention. And it's kind of a a big shift, I would say, as far as the younger people. There seems to be a lot more teenagers, 20-year-old, 30-year-old people that are really starting to pick up the turkey hunting swing now. And man, the last 10 years, if you look at gear, of course, you've got the whole TSS perspective that we can talk to. And then we've got so many shotguns, unfortunately, that where you point them with your bead do not hit on paper where you're aiming, and point of aim and point of impact has gotten really crazy. So it's created a lot of turkey snipers, in my opinion. I mean, 60-yard turkey guns are so common, and that's even in sub gauges. So the red dots, the gear, the decoys, the blinds, turkeys have had a lot of impact from human interference. And so we've chased that. Is it predators? Is it disease? What's going on landscape with habitat? And the fact of the matter is we're legit good killers. I mean, turkey hunters are killers. And birds are different in different places that you go. But Kentucky right now, for folks that are coming in, I would encourage you to stick to the very far western section of the state and the very far east section of the state. What's known as this Western Kentucky, and people will associate Peabody Wildlife Management Area, Land Between the Lakes, where I'm at. Our turkey numbers are still doing pretty bad overall. Yeah. And there's actually a commission meeting tomorrow where there's a little bit of rumble or traffic on the agenda that they may be looking at changing turkey regulations again. And it's not going to be to increase harvest. It's going to be, you know, more things put into place. So I would say that we're better off the last 2 years, though, Dan, than we have been the last three or four. The cicadas have really helped. And a lot of people have had really good response from habitat and predator management. If they've taken the time to burn and trap and do things for their turkeys, they're seeing some results. So it's all over the place.
You mentioned something about cicadas and that having an impact on the turkey population. How?
So cicadas are definitely a food source for the turkeys. And you have to understand that if you go back and understand the relocation of all these turkeys, it was very much known that years ago that grasshoppers were a big part of the turkey's diet. And whether people agree with it or disagree with it, we've changed our agriculture practices. We have a lot of plants. We have a lot of pesticides that are really good at eliminating pests to plants. And those invertebrates, those insects, these deserts of vegetation and these deserts of invertebrates not being on the soil surface and on the plants anymore, we've taken away a lot of turkey food. And so when it comes to these poults and these hens and these birds surviving, these cicadas have been there as a abundant food source. I mean, an extremely abundant food source. And it's coming during the time of the year that's corresponding with these poults being out on the ground, and it's keeping those poults and those hens happy and fed. And our gobblers, you know, of course, same way, their body condition's much better. And so if you look at these cicada swings and these populations, these sprawls of the cicadas coming up out of the ground and doing their thing, you'll see that in those years, there's huge influences of turkey dynamics and populations on the landscape. So good cicada years are normally in favor of helping with the survival rate of turkey hens and poults. And so we definitely have the weather factor that can come into play there. And we've been rocked really hard. Last year was unbelievable how bad we got flooded. But yeah, that cicada does not need to be overlooked at all.
Yeah. That's crazy from a standpoint of, I can remember when I was in, it was the late 80s, and I wasn't doing much. I mean, I was, you know, 5 to 10 years old in the late 80s. And I would be, my grandpa would be walking beans. Okay. So we would walk beans and we would pull all of the weeds out out of the ground. And so there was no weeds in the bean field. Right. And that was before, like, in, like, there was a ton of, you know, that was before like a ton of pesticides and herbicides and things like that. And I can remember bugs and grasshoppers and snakes and mice just all living in the, in those fields. Fast forward to today, walking through the same bean field, they're much taller,
And there's no bugs and no animals and nothing living mm-hmm. in those fields at all.
Yep. And, you know, and don't forget that the plants that we have now are GMOs. And so yeah. I'm pro agriculture. Let's not think about this as like we're saying it's all bad. We're feeding the world, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
We're feeding the world and it's better than starvation and we're really efficient. But whenever any type of piercing, you know, sucking, whatever, chewing insect takes and impacts a plant, those plants are designed now to where it will kill that insect. I mean, mm-hmm. they're genetically modified to do that. And so yep. you got to remember that that corn leaf or that soybean leaf is not necessarily primarily what needs to be in the diet of a wild turkey poke. And so our invertebrate populations, and I'm talking roly-polies, earthworms, grasshoppers, mm-hmm. all of these moths and different things, caterpillars, we need them. If we want to have game birds, it's not yeah. just the mowing. A lot of folks associate bush hogging and mowing practices with our quail population. And I think that a lot of our wildlife populations that are suffering or in decline in some areas are based upon our modern practices of production, mm-hmm. Habitat loss, et cetera. But don't rule out the predators either. I mean, right. The data from the 60s and the 70s, there was not as many coyotes and different things out there on the landscape. And the coyote has put the turkey on their menu, and so has the bobcat. And they have adapted. If you understand anything at all about evolution, then, of course, predators have gotten better, and there's more turkeys here now than when they did studies in the 70s and 80s. And so, yeah, there's a drastic change there, too. So there's a lot against the turkey. That's the turkeys in the last 10 years. Everybody wants to use there's a death of 1,000 cuts or whatever. Man, it's nothing is working in favor of the turkey right now, if you really no. think about it, other than people like my friend over at Turkeys for Tomorrow, Jason Lapartis, would be a phenomenal guest to interview sometime. He does a really good job at trying to look at what's going on with turkeys in the landscape. All of the staff over at the NWTF is trying. I mean, I don't know anybody that's in a turkey organization that's not trying to benefit and advocate for the wild turkey. So right. if folks like to turkey hunt, I encourage you to be members of both organizations. And get active. Sure. Be active. Yeah. Do your conservation work, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. I had a conversation with one of the wildlife biologists from the National, the NWTF last year, mm-hmm. and he was walking through like all of the different studies that they've done over the course of however many years, talking about like coyotes and, you know, anything from coyotes to like owls dive bombing mm-hmm. them in the middle of the night and killing them. While they're roosted, right? They're just an open target for those big birds. And, you know, and then all of just like the lack of habitat. And when you, it's crazy, especially in Iowa where farming practices are, I'm not going to say anything except farming practices are farming practices, right?
Right.
I'll never hate on a farmer, but it does affect, I mean, everything affects something, right? Mm-hmm. And so, the straight up lack of nesting areas for some of these birds, not only turkey, but pheasant and quail and any other bird that nests on the ground. Right.
No doubt.
And so there's a lot of changes that are happening, but at the same time, there's also some things that are going right. I mean, one thing that I've noticed, it's crazy because for every farmer who rips out a fence line and plants one extra row, I'm also seeing some more CRP being put in, which right. is a great benefit for all wildlife. Like I'm speaking strictly from the state of Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing what we can do if we just manage our mowing practices. You know, even areas like the grass waterways, different areas on the farm. Just our mowing practices, being able to go out there and when we cut our hay, I mean, you want to have the highest hay quality that you can get. There's no doubt. But man, just walk the field or drive the four-wheeler through it or do whatever you need to do to try to flush the hen off of her nest during that time that she may be sitting. But we will not go there today, but I will bring this up. When you look at Iowa, Illinois, and Kentucky, our cancer rates are going up. And last time I checked, Kentucky was the highest cancer rate there was. And the last data I looked at on the second state, it was Iowa. And so something's going on with whatever
we're doing. Did you see the maps that were recently put out?
I've seen a few. Now, I don't know if I've seen the same data as you, but I'll tell you this much. If we're sick as a society, as human beings, if we're sick, our wildlife's got to be sick too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Water, air, you know, ingestion of different things, however you want to slice it. What's really hard about this conversation is most of the time, people that were outdoors, men and women, they weren't looked at as environmentalists. If you really think about it, we were conservationists. And I will say this, as I get older, I am starting to realize even our farmers, I don't think our farmers are doing anything on purpose to harm or damage wildlife or human beings. But if they're told that a product is safe, and then 10 years later, we find out that it wasn't safe, all they did was follow the directions. Yeah. Where do we learn that? Let's go back to school teaching 101, follow the directions. If you can look up to somebody and they tell you that it's safe and it's a good practice, and we can assure you that this has passed all these tests and regulations, all we can do is do it. I don't know a farmer that lets me hunt or you hunt that's going to kill their own family, their nieces or their nephews. You get what I'm saying? And so I don't think production agriculture is trying to purposely do anything to the negative, but I do believe that we're able to reason and justify the fact that something's not right.
Yeah. So there was a guy recently, and I'll have to, I wish I could cite this. Actually, what I'm going to do real quick is cancer rates, and glyphosate sales, like, you know, your weed killers and things like that. Versus GOPHYCATES. There was a map. There was like a map, and it showed the top counties in the country in glyphosate sales, and then they matched it up to the highest cancer rates in the nation, and they lined up it's freaky how close they are.
Yeah.
And the cancer rates and the glyphosate sales rates. And I would encourage everybody to go do your own research on that. I can't cite anything right now. I'm just saying something that I saw.
Yeah.
And so anyway,
and on the consumption side too, we always talk about going out and bringing home lean organic protein. You know, you see all that stuff. Let me tell you something. I don't care if it's a deer or turkey, but when it's out there and it's eaten, especially around agriculture production areas, it's not organic. So at very, very slim chance that that animal's organic. So make sure you understand truly what that term means. And sometimes we think that just because we go out here, Mother Nature's environment, and harvest something, bring it back home, that it's the cleanest, purest meat we can get. It's great meat, don't get me wrong, but that animal's not eating an organic diet either. They're eating, you know, and they're dominating. There's no doubt. I think that there's areas that do really well with wildlife numbers because of agriculture production practices. But it's a dirty. We'll dig into it another day, but it would be interesting to really see where hunters do stand on their concerns and awareness, because if you look at those cancerous states, a lot of those areas are high populations of hunters. If you start breaking that map apart, some of your prime whitetail states in the country.
Yep, 100%. So, 100%. All right. Before we get into the rest of today's podcast, I do have to do a quick shout out to the brands of the partners of the How to Hunt Turkey podcast. And it's only one, but that is Montana Decoy. And I've been using Montana decoys, whether it's the deer when I go out west, or if it is my turkey decoys when I'm trying to pull them in from across the field. Go check out montanadecoy.com and check out their brand new lineup of turkey decoys. They got a Jake, they got a hen. I believe they got a strutter that you can go pick up as well. They're pretty badass. They can collapse down, throw them in your pack, pull them out, slap them down on the ground really quick. And they're good. montanadecoy.com. Go check them out. All right. You reached out to me and you were like, dude, turkey, everybody focuses on like this non-resident deer hunting.
Uh-huh.
All right. Everybody's so caught up in deer hunting. Non-residents got to go here, got to go there. And it sounds to me like there's a lot of opportunity in the springtime for non-resident turkey hunting that might be overlooked. Explain what you're talking about.
Well, turkey's a lot cheaper to hunt overall. Let's put it that way. And
that's a fact.
And as far as tags, they seem to be a little bit easier to come by.
Yep.
And from the standpoint of traveling across the country, whether it's public land, the private landowners a lot of times will be a little bit more willing to let you hunt. And there is some things that happen too. You have certain states, and we'll respect those states and let people do their own research. But there are certain states that if the land is not posted, you can legally hunt it. Now,
yep.
Out of character, it's good to try to contact the landowner. And you'll notice a lot of times those same grounds that you'll go to hunt waterfowl or to hunt deer, they'll be posted. But then when I go back into those states in the spring, the posted signs are taken down. There's a lot of ability to, with, I think, people's schedules. I think that the weather tends to be a little bit more stable and nicer. There's so many different ways that you can do your lodging and your traveling, and you can bounce and hit so many states. And then chasing 49 has become a big thing. Chasing the Grand Slam has become a big thing. Folks tend to socialize and hang out a little bit more during turkey season in general. Not saying that there's not diehards that don't travel a whole lot by themselves, but it just seems to be a little bit more social. And it's a little bit easier to get someone to share a turkey hunt with you than it is maybe hunting for a 180-inch whitetail. And you put all that together and you have a very fun, interactive game species. And I've listened in the last year or two, just, you know, with you talking about your kids, getting them out there, there is a lot to be said for, you know, some people are at all extremes on scent control. Some people are all extremes of how to hang or hunt, or whether to, you know, do this or that. And I think turkey hunting, for the most part, for people, there's a higher success rate than there is with killing trophy whitetails or whatever your title is on a trophy whitetail. There's so many different tactics that can work for turkeys too. And so when it all gets down to it, there may be some ways that are more effective than others, but I do see where folks, other than the reaping debate, I do see where most folks kind of let people have their own style when it comes to turkey hunting. I mean, there's a little bit of hate out there, but it's not like the crossbow and vertical bow world and tree stand versus saddle. You know what I'm saying? This bow, that bow, this arrow, that arrow. And so in the end, there's a lot to be had there as far as enjoyment. So.
Yeah, for sure. One thing that I've brought this up before, but one thing that I like, and I think that plays into this, is the fact that nobody's really passing a Tom that comes in. You know what I mean?
No
like
doubt.
Maybe a Jake comes in. Some guys won't kill it. Yeah. I think I'm good, especially if I go out of state, I think I'm shooting a Jake right in the face. Right. and so the one thing that I like about turkey hunting, it for me anyway, and I know some guys in the South are just caught up with it, and they want a certain thing to happen. For me, I don't
That's
care.
Right.
But uh-huh. I feel like turkey hunting is more of the type one fun, right? Where uh-huh. it's just buddies getting together. Hey, dude, let's go to X, Y, and Z this week, and let's go hop in the uh-huh. truck and go. Right. Come back, you know, a couple days later, get the job done really quick, really fun type stuff where it's mm-hmm. not like passing a whole bunch of, you know, 2-year-old 8-pointers that right. are just cruising by your tree stand every day during the rut in some spots. I feel like turkey hunting, all of that goes away, and it's one of, and I hate to say, one of the purest forms of hunting, because mm-hmm. I think whitetail hunting is really dirty right now, as far yeah. as all the talk and conversation about what you should and shouldn't do and how you should or shouldn't hunt, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm guilty of that, mm-hmm. but turkey hunting I think is cool because it sheds all that. And it's just you and the turkey out in the woods, and you're trying That's right. to jockey position to try to shoot a turkey, no matter how old it is.
That's right. And some of the different landscapes that you can get into and the places that you can travel. I mean, yeah. let's face it, if you kill a whitetail deer in Indiana, or you kill a whitetail deer in Iowa or Illinois or Kentucky, if it's a big whitetail, it's a big whitetail, right?
Yeah.
Not that things don't change a little bit with the different states, but when you start looking at going down to Florida and killing an Osceola, or you start looking at killing Merriams or Easterns, or right. you start looking at Rio Grandes, there's a way for the average person to get to experience a lot of different things over their turkey hunting career. And
right.
now that turkey's worth a lot more money now than what it used to be, especially that Florida bird. Mm-hmm. And there is starting to be a little bit of that negative kind of waterfowl whitetail influence in the turkey world. And I think that some of that is created with marketing, and some of that is
What do you mean
just,
by that?
Meaning that I believe you've got some people that are anti-decoy and some people are like pro-decoy. You have some people that are anti-blind and some people that are like, it's okay to sit in a blind if you don't want to get, you know, rained on. You've got some people yeah. that don't appreciate folks that hunt on a field, and you've got some folks that think that you need to come in timber. And I'll tell you this, because my earlier years of turkey hunting, I cut my teeth on public ground in Alabama on Chakalaka with some friends and looking at the Talladega National Forest and going down into those southern states. It is a pretty tough turkey to kill in those areas most of the time. There's very few days that they come easy. And then when you start to travel and you go to places like Texas, where they feed a lot of game with feeders, and you know that there's limited water, you can find that those birds travel certain routes, certain ways, and they're a little bit more predictable. And then you start going out west, and when you meet those people, like, you don't have turkeys back where you're from. You traveled all the way here to kill turkeys. Like, and turkeys are looked at as a pest there, to be honest, by a lot of the ranchers or farmers. You know, they feed their cattle out during the winter, and they've seen these big fall flocks and winter flocks, and they think that really you're just a flaming idiot for driving that far to shoot a turkey, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, it just puts you everywhere. And I don't think all turkeys are created equal. I don't think all parts of season are created equal. And I think that's really what's brought a lot back in check. When you ask me, like, what's going on with turkey hunting in the last 10 years in the state of Kentucky, it's gotten harder. It's gotten harder. And a lot of times people don't give turkeys enough credit too. You know, they think, well, you can just hold up a tail fan and they'll just come running right to you. Or, you know, you hear this stuff that they got the brain the size of a pea and different things. But there has to be at some point in time in your hunting career where you have to mature and understand that there are some places that are just easier to harvest game than others. And there has 100%. To be a point in a time in your career where you realize that getting to travel in and out of these towns and meet the people and get to see what our country is all about. I mean, what's better than going to Mount Rushmore after you've went turkey hunting or before your hunt and looking at our national history? What's better than standing somewhere, you know, if you get to go and see Yellowstone, or you get to go to the Grand Tetons, or wherever, if you can go in and out of these pockets and see this country, what people died for, what people bled for, because of the fact that you're chasing a turkey. I mean, you can't knock somebody for stopping in somewhere and having a beer and a local plate lunch with a meat and two vegetables, and spending 2 or 3 hours there talking to a local, because you're not going to get that until you start hitting the road and you do travel. And in those trips, the trips become so enjoyable. Those folks that you meet and the people that you engage in conversation with, I don't know what it is. I mean, I don't know if it's a God thing. I don't know if it's just a maturity thing. But a lot of times those people, you're in contact with them more and more each year. You check in at Christmas. I mean, you establish these relationships too. And that's the other part of the traveling hunter, I think, that is so important, is you understand the food, you understand the culture, you see what's in the sky, you see what's on the terrain, and some places are just better to hunt than others, right? And so you find areas that have a good population of turkeys, and you find a place that turkeys are actually really enjoyable. They gobble a lot. You can see them. It's easier to access permission or public grounds that are not necessarily overpopulated with hunters. And you do it basically on a pretty manageable, affordable trip, that it becomes addicting real quick. And I can't tell you how many times I've been on these trips where some days I'll hunt really, really hard, and man, other days I'll go and sit and eat at a local cafe, or I may just pull up alongside a stream and pull my spinning rod out and go catch some fish. I mean, there's so many great things to do during turkey season, and you're not freezing to death in most places, right? And you don't have just that one little window of opportunity. Like when big cold fronts hit during turkey season, a lot of times that will shut birds down or change their patterns. And so you may be able to take a day or two off. That cold front hits during whitetail season, and man, you got to get out there in the elements. So I will definitely say that I can pick and choose my weather a lot better during turkey season as well. And I think that has a lot to be said with not, you know, having to get out there and freeze to death. And you don't have to be out there and just the best of gear either. You can just be out there with everybody's got something to go turkey hunting with, you know. I mean, $20-$30 worth of calls, $150-$250 shotgun even today, a box of shells, and man, you can make your own blind, you can cook out some stuff around the tree, you can walk around. I mean, I love it when you can go turkey hunting and you feel like a pinball inside of a pinball machine, just moving around, you know, birds gobbling, you know, there's always lights and sounds and things going off. That's a good turkey hunt, you know, so.
The Fed's out of options, rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real, tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Yeah. And that's, like, for me, the best part. And I've never traveled for turkey. But I feel like the older I get, the more I want to, because there's less activities. There's only baseball in this. And I'm pretty bummed out, because I don't know what's going to happen, but I know that in the next, like in 1 week from yesterday, I have a total knee replacement. And that's going to keep me somewhat close to home for 4 weeks. So I'm going to miss, I don't know if I'm going to miss it or if I'm going to just try to get on a pair of crutches and go sit down somewhere and you know what I mean? And try to figure out how to get in the woods after, after 2 weeks of a total knee replacement. You know what I mean?
You'll be motivated though. That's a good thing.
Motivated. Right. Right. And so I hope, you know, I'm not going to be stomping like I normally do, but my daughter, I feel like I'm going to be able to leave my oldest boy with my stepdad. And then my daughter, she's 13 now. Uh-huh. So she gets it. She knows gun safety. She's not going to blow her own foot off, that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And I think I'll be able to set her up on her own and back up away from her. You know what I mean? Yeah. And make that work.
Yeah. As long as you're legal, you know, wherever you hunt it, you know, as long as you're legal, if she's old enough to do that, then, and you know, that'll be a good time for you to kind of turn her loose and let her do her own thing. I mean, people don't understand until they have their own children or work with children, or new hunters, how much it takes to master, I guess would be the best word, everything that you got to do. And, you know, what if she shoots too early, or what if she lets it get in too close, or what if she can't remember how to take off the safety, or what, all of those things come into play, lining the blind up, or, you know, finding her a good height. I mean, how far she sits at the decoys, but you'll be good to go. And you're scouting. Yeah. See, there you go. You'll be able to scout birds from a distance, and you will execute a plan probably differently because you can adapt to your body. Yeah. And it's no different than somebody who's aged and maybe they've got some hip pain or joint pain. It's not going to knock them out. You just may not do it the same way that you're used to or the traditional style that you want, you know?
Right.
But you can still go. You can still
go. Exactly. Okay. So that's kind of a long way, in a weird way, coming back to traveling. Dude, I think in the next couple of years, if my oldest boy wants to go on an out-of-state turkey trip, dude, I don't think I'm going to have a problem pulling him out of school to go try to shoot a bird in like a neighboring state for like a three or four day weekend.
And the other thing is, too, look at his school schedule. And he may have 2 or 3 days off here or there, or he may have a spring break or something where he's off. And you can't go turkey hunting in Iowa, but you could run down south and let him get to experience that. Or the other thing, which is more important, if you want to look at it, is if you all get out of school at a decent time, it's like turkey season runs all the way up through June in some states. Mm-hmm. So, and you're not in that critical time of peak baseball season. You're not in that time of peak testing with school or whatever it is. But yeah, there's opportunities there to get them and travel. And the other part is too, anybody that's got children out there and they want to take their kids out of school, there are forms and ways in which you can get permission to get your kids pulled out of school so that they can travel and see these things that we talked about, these monuments and getting to see the Grand Canyon or getting to go see, you know, I don't care what it is. It could be a distillery. It could be a manufacturing business. It could be going to the Capitol. There's a lot of different things. And here's the other thing. Nobody has ever podcast about this ever. A lot of these kids, if this chasing 49 is such a big deal, these youth turkey seasons on public ground are amazing. Mm-hmm. Like Florida youth turkey season, or you want to go to another state where maybe it's a little bit tougher to get that turkey and you're really wanting to bring up a little diehard turkey hunter that's a go that you think that if they like to hunt. So many of these states, they have special youth hunts. So many like the NWTF, Turkeys for Tomorrow, they'll have special promotional things to get young hunters involved. And there's a red carpet there if you'll look for it. If you'll look for it. And the same thing's true with females. Is, you know, you may not have that many female listeners on spring turkey hunting, but there's a lot of just gender specific turkey hunts and opportunities. And take advantage of that, because a lot of these WMAs that may or may not be open for regular season to adults, a lot of times they are open for youth hunts or their special quota hunts to where they don't have to use their statewide tag. You don't have to travel outside of your state just to get a longer and better turkey season. A lot of times you can get your kids involved. And if you're a diehard hunter, eventually you get to the point to where it's as enjoyable, if not more enjoyable, to watch somebody else get to pull the trigger. And you can do all the work. I mean, there's no doubt it's a shared credit. It's a responsibility of getting in there and putting strategies together. And I will say this, when it comes time to hunt, I believe there's a lot more dynamics in deer hunting that can be agreed upon than sometimes with turkey hunting, because sometimes you got people that want to push, and sometimes you got people want to hold back, and sometimes you got people that want to set and wait them out, and some want to use decoys and no decoys. You really, when you turkey hunt with somebody, it's pretty important that you all have at least similar hunting styles or your chemistry mixes well together. And so that's an important thing. But let your kids make decisions is really important. The audio part of turkey hunting is really good with kids too. And so if you do start all this traveling and going out of state, make sure that you've got some things to do in the downtime. Because like a bad rainy day, yes, you can kill turkeys, but they look like a wet rat. They may not be that, you know, active. Yeah. I mean, different scenarios, different days, but yeah, I mean, get them out there, get them traveling, take your kids camping. It goes back to that weather. You know, the weather can be nice. Grill a hot dog, start a campfire, you know, pitch a tent, you know, set up camp, tear down camp, take them fishing, let them go play in the creek and catch some crawdads. Let them do all that stuff. They're wanting to get out and do things much more than just shoot a turkey in the face. I can tell you that. Like, they just spend some time being a dad or a stepdad, or, you know, spend some time with your family. We need as a country, as Americans as a whole, we need to camp and fish and hunt more. And anytime that you can do that, and you don't have to go back home, I do believe that when you're on these trips, no matter what the game species is you're hunting, when you can actually leave home and leave home at home, I just feel like that you get engraved and wrapped up in such a better feeling of engagement from the hunt than you do trying to get a quick hunt in before or after work, or, you know, get a couple hours in, you know, here or there. It's when you can fully invest in it, there's a lot more of a reward into it. It's pretty sacred, really. And you don't know it until you've done it. You just don't know it until 100%. You've done it.
So. And the crazy thing is I'm getting ready to launch a Nine Finger Chronicles episode tomorrow, which is Friday the 20th, about a shed hunt that I went on with my boy and our neighbor boy, who they're best friends. And they had, I didn't even need to ask them. You could just see it. Mm-hmm. They had the time of their life.
Yep.
Like, they found one shed antler, we pulled in, we got out of the truck, we started walking this buffer strip, boom, a shed right there. Mm-hmm. And that set the tone for the next 2 days.
Yeah.
And they were fired up to the point where they did not want to leave when it got dark. They're like, can we look for them with flashlights? I'm like, nah, you know, I've been hunting for like 30 years now. And that's happened one time where I accidentally found a shed while walking out of the timber one night. So, they had an absolute blast.
And turkey hunting can turn into, it can turn into a mushroom hunt. It can turn into a shed hunt. Me personally, I feel like some of the most active deer trails that I can find is during spring turkey season because of precipitation and the ground thawing and freezing. Like, I find a lot of good deer sign. Like, I do a tremendous amount of deer scouting during turkey season, a tremendous amount. Mm-hmm. But more than anything, turkey hunting probably teaches me, and it teaches young people, how to move through the landscape more so, because I guess there's just a point where I'm not worried about bumping deer. I'm not worried about a sanctuary. I'm not worried about, you know, my impact on it. But you do understand how you got to move on the terrain. It benefits you being a woodsman turkey season, no doubt, but it really does teach you a whole lot about like finding great big oak trees or hickory trees to go back to and squirrel hunt. You may find a blue hole of water and find a bunch of shad or minnows down in it. And you can take a kid. For anybody that's going to take kids out hunting and fishing this spring, this is going to sound really corny, but man, take an old candy box or a dip can or something and just put some hooks and sinkers and enough fishing line in there and make a kid go grab a piece of a timber, like a stick or a limb, and put some bread or something in there and let those kids catch some minnows and stuff out of the creek. Like you have no idea, man. They are over there looking like Huckleberry Finn, but they love that stuff. They love it. And let them do whatever they want to, man. Let them swim in the creek, right, or let them row their pant legs up, because those are the minutes and the moments. Being a parent is a really important role. And if you're going to raise a kid that's going to be a good turkey hunter, or a good deer hunter, you've got to gain their respect and their rapport first. Yeah. And if you can build that trust with them as a parent or a mentor, then they're going to start listening to you on how to hang your deer stand, or how to set up your turkey decoys, or what's an effective range or non-effective range. Don't ever forget the power that we have as men to set character in young people. Don't ever forget that. That's a fact.
All right. How many states you hitting this year?
Well, I'll definitely hit Kentucky. I'll start off there with my daughter and some youth. Then I'll come back during that regular season. I'll hit Tennessee because their season's been a little cranky. All this turkey population, that question of what's gone on with turkey in the last 10 years. A lot of your southern states have made their turkey season longer. And so where there's Tennessee season comes in a week earlier in Kentucky. So I'll go and hit that. That'll be the end of my spring break. I'll be turkey hunting some in Illinois with a buddy of mine that had double knee replacement. And he's nice. Wanting to get back out there and chase it. So I'm going to give back to one of my friends that needs a little extra help. And I'm glad to see him getting back out there and be able to hunt pain-free. So we'll do that. Then basically from that point, I will start to adapt based on weather. And once that weather starts telling me where I can and can't go, I'll be fighting, like everybody, a real job, being a family man. And then I will get out of my row as a school teacher sometime around late May, and I'll really start hitting the East Coast really hard this year. And people say, well, what states are you going to hunt in the East Coast? Well, it just depends on how well the turkeys are acting, because you can be in 7 or 8, 10, 11 states just in a matter of, 10 days. And it's pretty easy to go through those little New England states, and to move, they're pretty small. So that will be the bulk of what I do this year. This won't be a big West year. This will be a big Eastern year for me. And I'll probably more than likely finish out in June up in the state of Maine and hang out with some of my friends there and catch up with them, and then come back home, and we'll be going into that big spawning period and post-spawn period of bluegill fishing, and I'll enjoy the rest of my summer eating fresh turkey breast, man. So there's no telling where I'll go, but 10 states will probably be about normal. There was years that I was killing 20-25 turkeys a year, keeping my job and being a family man, and it just changes.
That doesn't even seem realistic to me. Killing 20 birds a year.
Yeah,
that's crazy. Yep. But then again, Iowa is technically it's a two bird state. You can shoot one in the early three seasons. And then if you do that, then you can get a fourth tag for the late season. But are there states out there where you can kill more than two birds?
Yes, there is. And there's a lot of states that have actually pulled back on how many turkeys you can harvest. Like, it was very common for me, for example, like in Tennessee, 10 years running, I would say, I would go down there in a matter of 4 or 5 days, I would kill my four turkeys. There's a lot of years.
It was four times. That's how strong the turkey population was at one point.
In that particular pocket that I hunted, yes. There's places where you can kill multiple turkeys in a day. There's certain states that you can only kill one bird per day. Now, the other way that you can start stacking turkey numbers, if you really want to get out there and take advantage of things, is, for example, you may be able to do a quota hunt in your state that's a bonus tag, or you may be able to go hunt a military base and kill and harvest some turkeys that is a different bag limit or a different tag than what your statewide tag is. And that's big. It used to be, and there's not as many of them anymore. Used to be there was a few states that had like archery only seasons. Like, I remember going out to Kansas for several years and they had their archery season before they had their shotgun season. But when you when you start breaking down and dissecting this traveling turkey hunter lifestyle, you really got to start taking advantage of how close you are to the next state. And that's one pointer that I'll give people. Anytime that you start getting on the borders of states, and a lot of times those will be rivers, right? Those will be agriculture, river bottom areas, which will tend to be very highly impacted with good turkey populations. They used to be long before everybody kind of learned all the ticks and trips of how to do this. You know, hey, hit this state, and travel along this river, this highway. A lot of that has been copycatted, right? So you have the original OGs, and now you've got the copycats. And the copycats have really put a negative. That is one negative of this podcast. There's a lot of people that have shared way too much information, just giving it away. And then
you're talking about specific locations, right?
Yeah, just like certain little towns or certain pockets, or they share too many pins. Or you got to realize that we don't need to be such a negative impact into certain areas to where the residents don't like us as non-residents.
Yeah.
But you also got to understand that our job as conservationists is we don't need to put so much pressure on a particular flock that we're over hunting it. And that can happen. Right. And these state game agencies prove that was happening. And there's a lot of debate on whether or not season should come in later or earlier. But try to get off into places that are really remote when you travel these states, and try to get somewhere where there's no lodging. That's the secret to a lot of good deer hunting. It's a secret to a lot of good waterfowl hunting. And it's a secret to a lot of good turkey hunting. And that's kind of where I reached out to you on the lodging side of things. There is a new way to travel and hunt, and it's just not going to be for turkeys, but my experience is going to start with turkeys. And when you can be as adaptable and mobile with where you sleep as how you hunt, it's going to increase how many tags you start filling. And that's the name of the game. I say turkey killer. There's a lot of turkey enthusiasts. There's a lot of really good turkey hunters.
Yeah.
But when you start looking at chasing 49, let's just call an ace and a spade, people are looking at where they can go and they can harvest their bird and go on to the next state. It's not just doing a checkbox, okay? It goes back to understanding the lifestyle and the culture. But it takes a little bit to start knocking down 10 states, 20 states, 30 states, 40 states, and you're not just going to go camping in Hawaii, okay?
Right.
You're not just going to go camping over here and there. And turkey hunting's changing so much, man. Like my buddy Dink Watson, that would be a great person to interview. I mean, they're turkey hunting turkeys in New Zealand in August. You've got people that are going over and hunting with outfitters and doing private hunting and public hunting in Hawaii, and then they're taking their wives for their 30th and 40th year anniversary. You've got people that are more or less basically keeping Airbnbs in business. You've got people that are traveling in and out of campgrounds, but you can't put your stake down too much during turkey season when you start chasing this 49. You've got to be able to move and adapt, and you can't just think sitting at your desk or looking at your phone e-scouting and think, well, I'll go over here for 5 or 6 days and I'll have me a nice little hunt. You need to be able to be mobile, move quick. And this is where gear really starts to shine. And I will tell you that my turkey hunting lifestyle and my turkey hunting approach is what taught me how to really fine tune my hunting gear much quicker than my whitetail hunting ever did. Because I'm in and out of so many different body ranges of heat. I'm in and out of so many different weather conditions. And I was able to adapt, and I started learning and realizing that ounces count. And I started realizing that quality is more important than quantity. And then I really started realizing what I really need versus what I wanted. And I got past that go-go gadget era, and I'm so glad I did. And turkey hunting really started that, because I was putting on my turkey vest and, man, I was throwing 30 pounds of everything on me. And that's why all these chest packs and these chest rigs are so popular now. Is it's not because it's the cool thing. There is some influencer stuff going on there, but it's popular now because we're being more efficient, right?
Right.
What's happened to the turkeys in the last 10 years? We're more efficient hunters. We're better killers. Right. And so we don't necessarily need that big old donut or that big 4-inch pad slapping us in the back of the legs as a turkey vest now. We're moving quicker. We're cutting through terrain quicker. we can get access to more states quicker. All of the technology has made turkey hunting easier too. All of Onyx, all of that stuff has really done well. And don't rule out the trail camera and what it's done with, yep, with turkey hunting. I mean, a lot of folks have got a quick season because they get a picture of a bird and it's strutting in the back pasture. So they make a move around and they're looking at their phone and they're cutting the terrain and they know the bird's out in the field and they're walking up in there and reaping them or calling them up or yelping them up and they're done. They're back to the house. We're devastating on turkeys. Doesn't matter what state you're traveling to, doesn't matter what state you're hunting in. But how you hunt, how you camp, how you move, it's all important. Like, I got to get a new set of truck tires next week. And, you know,
that's a hunting gear. I mean, I actually did a podcast a couple months ago, and it was non-hunting hunting gear. Yeah. And it was truck toppers and tires and windshield wipers and all these things that it's not like the pull the trigger type gear, but it's all the stuff that's important. Yeah.
Yeah. If you remember, that was me and you. We did that.
Oh, so. That's right. That's right. It that was you. And you.
Yeah. Yeah. So this truck tire deal, it's big. My topper's gone. You know, I've got a slide in camper basically now, a Freedom camper. That's why I went across to Missouri and worked with those folks. And they know, they really do know. It's not an infomercial. They know what they have and they know how it's going to impact turkey hunters and they know how it's going to be a tool and a resource for them. And I want to advocate for it. I want to promote the people to get out there and camp, and I want to promote the people to travel and look at different states. But build enough time as you travel in and out of these states. Don't just check off this state and that state, and don't just jump up out of a ditch or ambush one just to kill one in a state. Yeah. Like, make sure the hunt's for you.
Yeah.
But make sure when you travel. And I bet you can relate to this, a deer hunting. Make sure you build enough time in there to where you can actually relax or rest if you have a bad weather day, or build enough time in your schedule where if you have something that's chaotic with your gear, or maybe the game, or maybe the pressure is not what you expected. Hunting should not be to the point to where it's not enjoyable. Hunting shouldn't be to the point to where you're cussing and mad or upset, and go into everything knowing that the worst could happen. That could be pressure. That could be weather. Yeah. That could be maybe no birds are there, or maybe, you know, the situations they've done a burn and you didn't know about it, or they're doing something with road construction and you're not going to be able to get around a certain route to the section of WMA that you scheduled. Like, plan for everything. And that's a big important topic there. You know, as you travel, a lot of these states, they're cold and they got so much snow and ice during the winter. Guess when they do all their road repair? Well, they do it during the middle of turkey season. So you may have 200 prime acres and you can't even hear a bird gobble because they're running a jackhammer and a bunch of equipment trying to resurface the asphalt, you know, on the road. So gas lines are going in all over the place in this country. Birds are going to be bumped and birds are going to be disturbed. Cattle prices are at an all-time high. So you're starting to see a lot of people clean up farms and really consider, you're talking about CRP. I'm seeing a lot of people trying to get into the cattle market because they see it as like a big moneymaker right now. So you've got some old farms that are going to get cleaned up again. And man, we could go so many different places, but try to stay somewhere other than a hotel. And get out and get under the stars and try to boil your own water and make your own coffee and eat a granola bar or two. You know, get dressed in an area that's confined to where you basically got to be a gymnast, and get mad when there's, you know, a little bit of wind and it's freezing you, or a little bit of rain that hits you and you're getting colder. I mean, I know as we get older, we're supposed to become more men, but I'm not afraid to admit that weather, you know, you can learn what humidity is real quick when you spend a night in the back of your truck or spend a night in a tent, and you understand real quickly why gear is important and why layering is important and why your preparation with how you store everything in your vehicle is important. And you'll only go on one hunting trip and not have something to where it will be with you the rest of your hunting trips to come, because there's nothing worse than being away from home and you know that you got that one thing and you don't have it and you could have easily had it. So put that gear building and put that gear organization into your year-round development as a hunter, because there's as much fun and as much enjoyment to me now to figure out how I can reorganize, regroup, and adjust my gear to my application is actually getting out there to the field to hunt, because I realize that I'm getting smarter at the sport that I'm pursuing and I'm getting better instead of just having another year. And I find pride. I find great pride in being a better hunter and being more efficient and working on my nutrition and my health and my sleep and my expenses, everything. I mean, there's something that everybody can improve on as you age in hunting. And so make it a year-round sport and figure out what you can do to make yourself a better outdoors man or woman. And don't ever overlook that woodsmanship. I mean, it's just, man, it's so important. I mean, that you'll learn a lot hunting in other states. You'll learn a lot hunting other species. You'll learn a lot just being somewhere that you've never been before. And the really cool thing about it is, it's amazing how much knowledge you can pull from somewhere else into that spot, but it's also humbling how many spots can absolutely train wreck you and kick your butt, and you think you know it all and you don't. And it's just like, ooh, got to regroup. It's not going to work here. It may work back here. And even the terrain may even kind of look the same, but it's like, and how many ways do you want to twist it, right? Do you want to go in by boat? You want to go in by airboat or kayak? Do you want to go in walking 10 miles? Do you want to, you know, have pre-scout? Do you want a door knock? What do you want to do? You know, you can make your own hunt, but don't go into it thinking that you're just going to hunt public, or don't go into it thinking that, you know, you've got it made just because you've got access to a 300 or 400 acre farm on private. Because, man, grandkids come along. I've lost farms to grandkids. I have lost farms to deaths. The turkey hunting impact is no different than the whitetail impact. And so to be able to travel and to make yourself adaptable and to be able to pull up somewhere on a piece of ground and be able to stay there and hunt for a day or two or a couple hours, it's priceless, man. It's priceless. And I like going to new places. I hate hunting the same spots all the time, because the repetition, to me, it gets really stagnant. It gets really old. I mean, there's places that I can take people to hunt and they're legit jam up spots, but I've been there, done that so many times that I can honestly tell you, you know, they say like, when you don't get excited, it's time to quit. Well, it probably would have been time to quit hunting there. And I wonder sometimes if hunter burnout, if some of the folks that don't hunt as much now as they used to, I wonder if they went and tried somewhere else, if it would inspire them to hunt again. I wonder if they just got burnt out of hunting the same spot each spring or each fall.
Yeah, probably. Probably. Well, I tell you what, Scott, man, great conversation today. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day and rushing home and doing this for us, but I appreciate your time, and good luck this upcoming season. I know I'm going to need all the luck that I can get. Hopefully you connect on however many birds you're going after and you're stacking them. So thanks again, man. I appreciate it.
Anytime. So you need somebody to join you in Iowa, we'll figure it out next year, and you can come up here and join me, or down here in Kentucky. So we'll do a little swaparoo. So good talking to you.